What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to talk about, you know, some of the wins and losses of the last couple of weeks. You know, beat the Bucks, but pretty much since the last time I recorded on Wednesday, been a three-loss week, so we'll break down those losses, talk about some positives, some big-time performers, also talk about some guys that didn't have great games, and then we're going to kind of move on into a couple of different topics. Obviously, we're going to talk about the draft lottery, give you guys an update on where the Wizards not only stand, but where the Clippers stand. Because remember, the Wizards are almost locked into getting that Clippers first round pick. It's either them or the Thunder. And we'll break that down, where that is and what to expect from that location of pick. We're also going to talk about some different things, such as notes going forward, who I don't think is going to return this season. You know, what to watch for the final couple of games. Talk about Jared Butler's contract. And then also, I don't know if you saw, but me and Ben Standing of The Athletic, I wouldn't call it a Twitter beef, but I would call it a little bit of a Twitter argument in regards to something Ben posted. So just kind of want to talk about that, give my thoughts on that situation and what Ben proposed on Twitter the other day. And yeah, just kind of wrap it up with that, some draft stuff. So, you know, without further ado, just going to kind of get into it now. And that's first discussing a week in which the Wizards lost to the Lakers. They lost to the Blazers, and they also lost to the Raptors. So obviously, not the greatest of losses. I mean, the Lakers are, I think, over 10 to 11 games over 500. So they're not bad. But the West is stacked, so they're kind of in that, you know, 9 or 10 spot. I think 9 in the West. Obviously, the Blazers are the fifth worst team in the league. The Raptors are, you know, also a bottom 10 team in the league. So those are games that you don't necessarily expect to win. I mean, they're the second worst team. You're even worse than that. But you expect to be competitive. And the Wizards, for the most part, were competitive early on against the Lakers. But then they decided, you know what? The Wizards have no center right now. They got Tristan Vucevic and no one else. Because if you remember, Bagley's missed the last two games. Holmes has missed the last couple of games with the toe injury. You know, they got nobody except Vucevic at center. So they realized that Anthony Davis killed the Wiz, and they had no interior defense, and they got killed in the second half of that game. It was similar with the Blazers. I mean, they had no answer for DeAndre Ayton. And look, DeAndre Ayton's was really bad in the first half of the season, but he's come on strong in the second half. And he just torched the Wizards. They had no answer. And look, there's nothing you can really do. I mean, he's bigger than everyone. He's playing Vucevic, who's, you know, in his fifth NBA game. And after that, when he's sitting, he's playing against, you know, a bunch of guys that aren't even like 6'8 and above. So it's tough to contain AD and to contain Ayton when you don't really have that true center. And if you want to count Vucevic as a true center, even though I think he's a power forward, he's in his fifth NBA game. What do you want him to do? So that was kind of the story against the Lakers and Blazers. Just no, you know, no interior presence defensively, and they got cooked because of it, resulted in losses. And then the Raptors game, which by the time we're recording this was last night on Sunday. Awful start. The Wizards got down 29 points in the first quarter, which is just disgusting. But credit to Brian Keefe, his guys could have rolled over and just gave up, being that they've, you know, been eliminated for months now. But they didn't. They went on, I think it was an extended 21-2 run, got right back in the game. We're in it at the end as well. I mean, they cut it to, I think, 5 with about a minute left. But obviously just too much to come back from. Not enough pieces available or healthy. And that's kind of a summation of the last couple of losses. Don't want to break it down too much, but, you know, lack of interior presence also definitely didn't help in the first two games. And getting outscored by nearly 30 in the first quarter also did not help the Wizards' case at all. But there's a couple guys, instead of talking too much about these losses, I want to talk about some positives that you can take away from what we watched these last couple of games. The first one is Tristan Vucevic and his emergence. He's played, I believe, 6 or 7 NBA games now, maybe 8 NBA games. Really only played 5 because his first couple were just 2 to 3 minute stints of running up and down the court, passing the ball off and doing nothing. So I'm going to say he's played 5 NBA games. He started 3 of them. The last 3 games with Bagley and Holmes out, Tristan Vucevic has started at center. And I mean, he's been so, so impressive. I didn't expect much coming in, and that's probably because the last couple of rookies that have come in here have been terrible. But with Bilal playing as good as he did this year, and with Vucevic coming over, I should have seen that this front office really knows what they're doing. People forget this was the 41st pick in the draft, or maybe 42nd pick in the draft. Comes over from the Serbian League as a draft and stash guy, who I thought we wouldn't see this year, but comes over early. And it's kind of a you're signed for the rest of this season for $1 million, or 2.1, I think. And then next season is a team option, so we're probably gonna decline that and then give you a new contract based on how you play. And if how he's playing is any indication, you should lock him up to about a 4-year deal. Over his last four games, he's averaging 14.3 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists. He's got an incredibly soft touch around the rim. He's had a couple of really nice finishes through contact, a couple of nice floaters. He's got like a little, it's not a hook shot, but it's a little like over the shoulder floater that he's got going on, which is a really good thing to have in your repertoire as a center. And his outside shot looks good. The form looks good. He shoots it with confidence. His last couple of games hasn't been good shooting the three at all. But what are you gonna do? I mean, he's still learning. There's still some things he can't get good at right now. But I do like where the shot is and the confidence overall is with the outside jumper. And look, his passing skills aren't bad. He's not Jokic out there threading the needle, but he had two backdoor passes, pocket passes, one to Poole, one to Denny, where he looks like he can really be like a guy that you work the offense through and can make the right play. So just really impressed overall. And look, the Wizards are 1-4 over those last four games that Vucevic is balling out. But Vucevic is a plus in all four of those games. I think it's plus five, plus five, plus six, plus six. So even though the Wizards are 1-3 in that stretch, Vucevic is a plus 20, which signals that, he's doing something right when he's on the court and he's affecting winning, both on, offense and defense. So really, that was probably the stat that stood out to me the most. You lose three of four games and the guy's plus in every single one. That shows that he's doing something right when he's on the court. So couldn't say enough, couldn't be more impressed with Tristan Vucevic and what he's done so far in a small sample size at that, but with four games left, I've been very impressed. Now we're moving on to a guy that we've talked a little bit more about on this podcast for most of the season, and that's Jordan Poole. Look, Jordan Poole in the beginning of the season, the Jordan Poole now has to be the biggest in-season growth that I've seen from a player in a while. And I'm not counting Denny because that's off-season growth. He came in and he was ready, and he's been the best, arguably, the best player on this team, all season long. But Jordan Poole, and I'll say this, I tweeted this out before the Raptors game. Jordan Poole just played in his 77th of 79 possible games this season. That's the most impressive stat for me. Just availability is the best ability. And in a league where a lot of guys don't play too many games anymore and a lot of guys are sitting out, for him to play 77 games so far on pace to play eight, I would assume he doesn't play probably the last game or the last two games because there's no point, but on pace to play 80 games of 82, especially in a season where your team has been eliminated for so long and you never really had a shot at doing anything, that's something I respect. He doesn't have to play every game. He's making almost $30 million this season, regardless of if he plays zero games or 82 games. But he's going out there because I think he genuinely wants to get better. He likes playing. And that's just it's something you got to admire and something you got to appreciate. So I really appreciate his availability. And he's played so much better as the season's gone on, especially when he's played point guard. I still can't believe Wes Unseld Jr. Threw him out here like he was Curry. We're gonna throw five different off-ball screens at you to get you open to shoot a three. Just put the ball in his hands. Good things happen when he has the ball in his hands. He scored 20-plus points in each of his last three games, which includes two 29-point performances and a 20-point performance. He's averaging 26 points, 9 assists over his last three games, shooting 41% from three during that stretch, so very efficient. And it's coming off a game at Toronto where he had 29 points, 12 assists, and he orchestrated the offense to a T. In the first half, he had nearly a double-double. He had 10 points and 8 assists. And then, took over a little more of the scoring burden in the second half, but was just, he was phenomenal. It was one of his best games of the season against Toronto. I don't know if I'm ready to say he's point guard one of the future, because although I really like him, and obviously I know he's a point guard, and he's here for 3 more years at least, I want to take best player available in the draft. And once we get into more draft stuff after the season concludes, I'll talk a little bit more about my philosophy on this. But obviously, in an ideal world, Jordan Poole continues to play this type of point guard through next season and really puts Dawkins and Winger in a place to say, look, he's getting paid a lot of money, but he's really good. And he's by far and away, a top 20 point guard in the league. And I think we can win with everything he brings to the table. And I'm not saying to build around Jordan Poole, but I'm saying he's done everything he can once given the chance at point guard to show why he should be the point guard of this team's future. So, look, if Rob Dillingham's the best player available in the draft, we already have Poole and Butler. I'm still going to take Rob Dillingham, and a lot of people aren't going to like that, but you got to take best player available. However, I do think Jordan Poole has done everything he can to prove why he could be the point guard of this team's future. So, again, can't say enough about his performance over these last couple of games, and that transitions us into Denny Avdija. Every single time I come on this podcast, it's something new with Denny, something that he's done really well, and not a lot of negatives. And that's so much different from the first couple of years of Denny, where you'd come on here and it'd be like, you know what? Denny had 18 points tonight. He was great, but he shot 0 of 5 from 3, or he missed 4 point blank layups, or he went 0 of 6 from the line, or he fouled out with 10 minutes left. And none of that stuff happens anymore. He genuinely looks like the best player on the court. I thought he was the best player on the court all night in Toronto. And they had RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley at 31 and 13. Jordan Poole had almost 30 points, but I still thought Denny was the best player on the court. His driving ability is just, it's unbelievable this season. And it's always been, a skill of his, but he's never been able to use his body and his frame to his advantage. You'd always, it was either one of two things. He'd barrel into the defender with no regard and pick up an offensive foul, or he would fade away from the layup and avoid the contact and not even come close, not get the foul call. Now he's using his body to, punish the defender without doing too much to draw an offensive foul, just kind of nudge them back, create the space, go up strong. He had back-to-back and ones in Toronto. I think a monumental put up a stat. He is by far and away the most and ones he's ever had in an NBA season. And that's maybe a little bit more respect from the officials with how well he's been playing. But it's also the way he's manipulating the defense. I mean, he knows where to put his body. He knows where to initiate the contact, and he's getting these finishes through that contact. And that's something he didn't do earlier in his career. So that's one. I don't even know how to explain the 3-point shooting, because I feel like in Denny's really good performances, he doesn't necessarily shoot that well from three. It's more, I'm getting to the rim at will. Why would I need to go at you from three? And he put it all together in that 41 performance at NOLA. But I would say that this Toronto game is probably his second best game of his career. 32 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists in the loss at Toronto. Led the game in scoring for both teams. Just terrific on the boards. In a game where they really needed him on the glass. No Bagley again, no Holmes, going against a Toronto team that's pretty big. And he really came in and crashed the glass like the Wizards needed to. Averaging 20 points and 8 rebounds on 55% from the field over his last three. So again, just like Poole, just like Vucevic, just like Kispert, these last 3 to 4 games have just been terrific for those guys I named. And again, his ability to get to the rim is something that he can take with him, because now that guys kind of have to respect him from three, he can use a pump fake. He can get downhill. He can get to his bread and butter, which is, I'm going to get to my right hand. I'm going to put my left shoulder into your chest, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's like the Zion level. And he's not Zion, but that's the Zion level where Zion, I'm going to drive left. I'm going to put my right shoulder into you. What are you going to do about it? You're going to foul me, or you're going to give me space, and I'm going to go up over you and make the layup. Denny's developing that, and he's right there, and that's something that's been one of my favorite things to watch this season is the way he's manipulated defenses, drawn contact, and finished strong through that contact. So look, 0-3 week against the Lakers, the Blazers, and the Raptors. Vucevic looks like he belongs in the league. Very, very good week for Vucevic. Pool point guard of the future, possibly playing very well. Denny, unbelievable game against Toronto. Very good week. Same goes for Corey Kispert, who I didn't mention, by the way. He's been solid all season. And the Wizards went 0-3. So, I mean, I don't think there could have been a better week. The young players played very well, and you lost every game to improve draft positioning. Like, you can't ask for much more. So, after that, I want to give some notes just to inform you guys that are listening on a couple of things, maybe some housekeeping, if you would call it. So Tyus Jones and Landry Shamet have been out for nearly a month. They're not going to return, and I said this a week and a half ago. And no, like, major outlet is really going to come out and say that they're out for the season because the Wizards haven't said they're out for the season. But I'm here to tell you that they're out for the season, and I said this 2 weeks ago, and I'm maintaining it. They're not going to play again. And I think if the Wizards were right in the thick of it, Jones and Shamet would be playing. I think they would have played last week. I think they're fine. But there's no point in playing them, and the Wizards don't want to just list them as not healthy or, rest. I don't know if what the I don't know if that gets you like a fine if you are not playing those certain guys, even though they're clearly healthy. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure they're healthy and they're not playing. And they won't play for the rest of the season, and I doubt you'll see him again in a Wizards uniform. And I think I can safely say the same thing for Marvin Bagley, who I thought could have torn his ACL a couple of games ago. Looks like he avoided major injury, but I doubt he returns. I doubt Rashawn Holmes returns. 3 games remaining in the season. He's got a toe injury. Why would you force him back? He's going to be back next season under contract, so keep him out. Keep Bagley out. Kyle Kuzma has missed, I think, 4 of the last 5 games. No point in playing him, especially if you're considering trading him this offseason. The worst that could happen is he gets injured. You can't trade him, and you're stuck with his contract if you didn't want it. So I think you can safely say Tyus Jones, Landry Shamet, Kyle Kuzma, Rashawn Holmes, Marvin Bagley should all be done for the season. Additionally, Johnny Davis left pretty early in the Toronto game with a hip contusion, didn't return. Status is uncertain moving forward, which sucks for Davis because these last couple of games, especially that one where he was starting, I thought he was going to play big minutes, and I thought he was going to get a real opportunity because at the end of last season he played 30 to 40 minutes a game towards the 5 to 6 games where Beal and KP and Kuz were out and the season was over, and he looked pretty competent. He had a 20-point game at Atlanta, but he's not kind of getting that same level of go out there and just play. I'm going to put the ball in your hands because he's still the fifth starter and he's still playing alongside Denny, Corey, JP. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's not really beneficial to Johnny Davis right now, the way they're utilizing him. So look, he's got to make the most of his opportunities. He's still starting. So, and I thought honestly, he's played better the last couple of games. Offensively, he drilled a corner three. He hit a couple of layups. I think he had a 5-point game the other day, but I don't care about the offense. The offense isn't that great. It's his defense that he's trying to hang his hat on, and I think he's actually been playing pretty good defense on some of the best players on opposing teams. So hopefully he's healthy and he can really make the most of these last 3 games. Patrick Baldwin Jr., who had been absolutely terrible the last week to 2 weeks, no legs on his jump shot. Everything was short, fouling all over the place. Just you really felt for him because there was no confidence in his game. He had an 0 of 8 shooting performance that included 0 of 7 from 3. Wasn't doing anything out there, and you felt for him. But, good players know when they need to bounce back, and they know, when they're not playing well, put the work in, figure it out, because no one's going to do it for you. And Baldwin Jr. did that against Toronto. 16 points, which was one shy of a career high 17. 11 rebounds, which was a career high. I think that's his maybe second career double-double. 2 blocks, 2 steals, so did it all on the defensive end as well. Arguably his best game, no, definitely his best game as a Wizard. Was on the glass all night, but just like Denny, when the Wizards really didn't have much interior presence, shot the ball pretty well. 16 points is a really nice addition coming off that bench. And then the two blocks and the two steals is the main part. I mean, he was a real presence defensively, and that's something that you want from him. Utilizing that length that he has, and the size that he has, and not playing scared, and really imposing his will defensively, and that's what he did. And you got to give credit where it's due. I had been pretty critical and harsh of him the last couple of games because he was trying to shoot himself out of the slump, and it was hurting the team. He wasn't making anything, and he wasn't helping on defense or rebounding either. But he put it all together in what was arguably his best game as a pro, and that's something you got to admire. And it gives me a little bit more confidence to give him a roster spot next season and see what he's got. Hopefully, he proves it in the summer league. So that's just a couple of notes moving forward. But I also do want to talk about my guy, Jared Butler, someone that I've been on since summer league, signing a 3-year standard NBA contract with the Washington Wizards. Look, is this going to break the NBA? Absolutely not. But it's like local news. That's what I'm learning in my communications class. We're learning about local news. This is news that's important to Wizards fans because only Wizards fans and maybe Baylor fans that have been watching him know how good Jared Butler is. In OKC for Summer League, absolutely killed the Wizards. I think he nearly 30 points against the Wizards in Summer League. I saw that and I tweeted out, please get this guy in a Wizards uniform. And I'm not going to say that this is all me, but who knows? Maybe Michael Winger or Will Dawkins saw my tweet and said, yeah, this guy's pretty good. So the Wizards signed him to a two-way deal. He killed it with Gogo, moved up to the NBA about a quarter of the way through the year, maybe halfway through the year, and hasn't gone down to the G League ever since. I mean, he's been terrific on that two-way deal. He's a point guard that brings excellent vision. Some of these cross-court passes, these skip passes, these lobs that he's throwing in the pick and roll, those are, 5, 6, 7 year veteran point guard plays that he's making in year three. Shooting touch is really nice. He's got a really good outside jumper. Can hit a floater if you need him to. The shooting is there, and the defensive instincts are the best part. I love when a point guard can run the pick and roll and shoot. But when he can hold his own on defense, especially at the level Butler can, moving his feet, getting, his hands in passing lanes, picking up steals, that is special, and that's not something you see in a lot in point guards. He's locked in as the backup point guard next year behind Poole, depending obviously on who the Wizards draft. But he's a very intriguing player, and people forget about Butler that he would have been a lottery pick after that Baylor National Championship win, had it not been for that heart condition that sort of, derailed where he was going to go in the lottery. Teams were concerned about it. He went to a couple specialists. He's all clear now. But teams were definitely skeptical of where he was at with that, and that's why he fell. And lucky for the Wizards, he's found his way to Washington, and he seems like he has a home in DC with the way he's been playing. So, shout out Jared Butler. Congrats to him and his family. That's life-changing money. He's really, set in the NBA. He's got a roster spot locked in for the next couple of years. So, just gotta respect a guy that comes into the league and doesn't, take anything for granted and earns that roster spot the hard way. And I'm very excited to see what he can do in a bigger role next season. Now, I do want to talk about, and I don't know if a lot of people saw this. This I think happened on Friday, but Ben Standig of The Athletic, great reporter, great journalist, covers the Commanders. He put out a poll on Friday that said, would you take Bronny James with a top five pick if you're the Wizards, if LeBron signed in Washington? So essentially, would you reach on a player that wouldn't have been drafted, possibly in the top 40 or 50, with your top five pick, just so that you can get LeBron James to come to DC? And look, Ben included reasoning to at least consider why saying yes. It was a few bullet points on why people might want to, rethink it if they're thinking no. And then he also linked an article to an Athletic article to the poll that was about Bronny James declaring for the draft. Essentially, this poll was, a primer to read that article. A little self-promotion in there. I gotta respect it. But I responded, I quote tweeted it, and I said, I respect Ben for his Commanders coverage, but this is a take from somebody who hasn't been plugged into the Wizards this year. It's year one of a rebuild. Why on earth would the Wiz reach on a prospect just to lure his 39-year-old dad to DC for maybe 2 years of mediocrity? And I say that because, look, this move would make zero sense for the Wizards. You just waited, 5 years too late to rebuild. You finally started to rebuild. After a year of just being absolutely terrible, the worst record in franchise history, you're going to blow it all up so that you can reach on Bronny James, who some big boards don't even have being drafted. Some have in the late 40s, early 50s. And all of that, you take him top five. Just so you can bring 39-year-old LeBron James to DC to maybe win a title. I got news. The Wizards are fucking terrible. Their roster sucks. And adding LeBron James isn't going to do anything for you. Look, LeBron is AD and a competent, at least, roster with D'Angelo Russell, Rui in the West. He's the 9 seed. He might not even make the playoffs in the West. And you think you can bring him here to the roster you have in D.C. and do anything better than that? I mean, that's just dumb. I thought it was a pretty stupid take. And I didn't want to say that because I respect Ben, and I'm not going to be disrespectful. But why on earth would the Wizards consider doing something like this? And Ben's response, Ben responded, quote, LOL, I'm quite aware of the Wizards situation. My response, then why would you propose something that completely contradicts that situation? If you know what the situation is, and you know the Wizards are finally rebuilding, they're only in year one of that rebuild, and you're still going to propose that they blow the entire plan up to bring in a near 40-year-old who clearly can't carry a team to a title anymore, bring him into an already terrible roster, and you also wasted your top five pick on a guy that wouldn't have been drafted otherwise. And all of that because you want to bring the Wizards back to popularity. Why? Why should I care that the Wizards are irrelevant? And that was one of Ben's biggest points is the Wizards have been irrelevant for 20 years. At least bringing LeBron here would give him some national attention. I don't give a fuck about national attention. If ESPN wants to give the Wizards zero national TV games, I couldn't care less. I have NBA League Pass. Most of you guys have Monumental Sports. I don't care if it's Mike Breen calling the game or Chris Miller. I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to enjoy it. I don't need everyone to share in the spotlight on, oh, I love the Wizards. I don't care that they're irrelevant. When they do this the right way and they bring it back the way that they've wanted to, the right way through the rebuild and not cheating the system after year one, then if people want to cover the team, that's fine. But I don't need to sign LeBron James and fuck my whole future over for 2 years of relevancy, according to some people. That would validate, the Wizards as a real NBA franchise because national people are covering them. I don't give a fuck. I don't care if national people are covering them. I don't care if they're irrelevant. I'm still going to watch the games. I'm still going to be a fan. And so are you guys. We don't need the national spotlight to make this team, what it is and why we watch. And just bringing over LeBron is just such a stupid idea. And it's an idea that is possibly for engagement farming. I mean, he linked an article to it, so I don't know if that was the point to generate a lot of views on the poll, hopefully bring a lot of eyes to that article. But it was a stupid take. And then for you to come at me after and kind of say, oh, why this is Twitter, bro. Like, why are you taking this so seriously? It's meant to be a lighthearted thing. Like, sorry, I didn't know this was supposed to be a joke. I mean, you're a real journalist. You cover the Commanders. Most of your stuff you post is very serious. And I'm just supposed to take this as, oh, I was just joking around about LeBron. Like, don't take it too serious. Like, this is a pretty reckless take. It's a dumb idea. That would never happen. And just to propose it like this, out of the blue, and then come at people for being upset that you would propose such a dumb thing. That's what kind of frustrated me. And then Ben tweeted out, look, I the response is crazy to this. Like, I can't believe people are getting so pissed off at this take. If you want to debate me, feel free to come on my podcast and debate me. I'd love to. Just send me a DM. I sent Ben a DM. He saw the DM. He didn't respond. Look, it's one thing to put out a take. But stand on that take. If people come at you and they don't like it, Engage in good dialogue. Don't come at them for taking it too seriously when you're a respected journalist that posts pretty serious takes. If you don't like my response, don't say that, oh, I'm taking you too seriously. Give me a good answer as to why you thought this was even a decent idea. And then you call on people to come on your podcast and debate you. I reached out to you, and you decided not to debate me. So look, I thought this was just a reckless take. I thought it was a pretty stupid take. And that's kind of the gist of it. I mean, you could say that I'm getting too worked up about it, but I mean, when you cover a team for an entire season, and then some guy that really hasn't been plugged into the team comes in and proposes a pretty reckless idea, it's frustrating to see something like that because that's never going to happen. It gets it into the minds of some Wizards fans, and some Wizards fans actually thought this was a decent idea, which is crazy. I think it was 64% thought, no, let's absolutely not do that. 36% were into it. But that's 36% of people that just want to take the shortcut and want 2 years of LeBron James on their team, and then they're terrible for another 5 to 7 years. This would set the Wizards back way more than it would help them. And look, if you guys and Ben want the Wizards to, start the second leg of this rebuild in 2027, if they want to start the second leg of this rebuild in the national spotlight, because the Wizards are now relevant that LeBron came in here for 2 years and didn't do anything, then that's fine. You can rebuild in relevancy. I'll continue my rebuild in irrelevancy right now and then get a top pick in this draft, not use it on a guy that won't be drafted, use it on an actual good prospect, and then keep my really good pick next year when we suck even more to get maybe Cooper Flagg or Cameron Boozer. That's what I'm gonna do in irrelevancy. I don't give a fuck about being relevant. So that's just my point on that, on the Ben Standing Bronny James poll. So moving on to kind of the latter part of this episode, and that's gonna just be talking a little bit about the lottery. The lottery system is a little confusing, and I just wanna I took about an hour yesterday to just kind of educate myself and inform myself on why on how the whole thing works so that I'm not, giving you guys false information. So I'm pretty confident in what I'm about to say. I've done the math. I'm not that great at math, but basically, with the loss to Toronto, the Wizards have clinched at top six pick at minimum. At minimum, they can't fall anywhere below six. And that's because the team with the second worst record has odds and lottery balls all the way up to six and then nothing else. So the farthest the Wizards can fall is six in this draft. And I think they would have like a 20% chance at that. So it's likely. But they also, I'm pretty sure they draw the numbers from 1 to 14. So the Wizards will have that 14% chance at one. Instead of like, oh, they have a 20% chance at six, and if they do get six and they don't get a chance at one, they do it starting at the first pick. So the Wizards will, no matter what, have a 14% chance at that first pick. And then it moves down from one to two to three and so on. And they should have lottery balls and a good chance of all of those picks. However, the Spurs and the Hornets being at 19 wins now, the Wizards max with 3 games remaining is 18, which is why, the Wizards are locked into that second worst record. Now, they can still get the worst record in the league, but it's going to take a lot. The Wizards have to lose out, obviously. They have at Minnesota, at home against Chicago, and then at Boston remaining. They're going to get killed in Minnesota and Boston. I mean, Boston might play their scrubs because they've already clinched the one seed, but the Wizards are already playing a lineup, that doesn't consist of many talented players apart from, the starters. And I doubt they're going to be playing in game 82 of a lost season. So I would assume those are losses. And then Chicago, they're locked into that second play-in tier at 9 or 10, but they're fighting with Atlanta for home court. They have a big game against Atlanta tonight, and they're still going to have some big games down the stretch. So they're going to try in that. So the Wizards are going to lose out. I would expect them to go 15. I would expect them to go 15-67 on the season. In order for them to tie Detroit, Detroit would have to win two of the remaining 4 games. And those games are at Philly, which Philly's really in the thick of it. They're going to kill Detroit. Home against Chicago, which same boat as the Wizards. Chicago really needs to win to get home court in the first play-in game, but still, they're just way better than Detroit. And then Detroit goes to Dallas and to San Antonio. So I think they're going to get killed in Philly and in Dallas. If they somehow manage to beat Chicago at home, then that game against San Antonio would be to tie the Wizards. And the tiebreaker for teams in the lottery, I'm pretty sure isn't head-to-head matchups. And even if it was, these teams split the season series 2-2, so that wouldn't matter. It's a coin flip, literally heads or tails. The Wizards and the Pacers did this last year, of course. The Wizards lost the coin flip. They always get fucked over in the lottery. But essentially, the Pistons have to beat Chicago and win in San Antonio to even make that coin flip a possibility, which I doubt happens. So the Wizards are pretty locked into that second worst record, which isn't a big deal. Still have a 14% chance at the first overall pick. Can't fall anywhere farther than six in a draft where, honestly, the players from 2 to 6 or 2 to 8 could go in any which order. I think Alex Saar is the top guy for me, but other than that, it's pretty open. So it sucks, obviously, if you get the second worst record and you fall to six, the worst possible spot you can have. But it's not the end of the world like it would have been in last draft, where the top four were really good and then it was a slight fall off from there. And then in terms of the Clippers pick, which, if you don't remember, the Wizards traded Daniel Gafford to the Dallas Mavericks for a Rashawn Holmes. And the first round pick is pretty weird. It's like the second worst of like the Jazz, the Thunder, the Clippers, and there's one other team in there. But essentially, it's between the Thunder and the Clippers, and the Thunder are 3 games better than the Clippers with 4 games remaining and have a pretty light schedule. All home games for the Thunder, so they're going to be better than the Clippers. The Wizards have the Clippers pick. And right now, that pick is currently at number 26. It likely can't get any worse than 26 in terms of going up. It's pretty locked into 26 or better for the Wizards, which isn't bad. But it's not like there's many teams near them that could surpass. I mean, they got 50 wins right now. I think the Mavericks are the second closest team at 48. And then the Bucks are behind them with 47, and there's probably 4 to 5 teams with 46. So unless the Clippers lose out and the Mavericks and Bucks win out, it's looking likely that it's going to be at 26. The Clippers' remaining schedule is a home and home against Phoenix, and then they are home against Utah and Houston. So I would assume they win at least at minimum 2 of those 4 games, and I would definitely think they take one of those two from Phoenix, which will put them at 53 wins and likely the fifth best record in the league, which is the 26th overall pick in the draft. So the Wizards are looking right now at a top six pick, and also at the 26th pick in the draft. And you got to remember, the Wizards don't have their own second round pick. They traded that a few years back, but they do have the Suns' second round pick. So obviously, the more the Suns lose, the better. That one, I think, right now is at around 40, 48, maybe, in terms of the draft. But the Suns are not great. They're not terrible. They're still, really solid record. But that pick right now is a little to where you don't know. I mean, they're tied for at 46 and 32 with three other teams. So the more the Suns lose, the better that pick becomes in the second round. And I know it's a second round pick, but look at Tristan Vucevic for why that location and that pick location would matter. So look, the Clippers pick is going to be 26. The Wizards are going to have a top six pick of their own. Hopefully it's at number one or number two. Obviously you don't want to fall in the lottery, but they position themselves in the right way. They've clinched their worst record since 1962 when they were the Chicago Packers. The worst record, the last time they were this bad was 2008, 2009 when they were 19 and 63. So look, the Wizards came into the season with a goal of developing players and sucking. They've developed players at a decent rate. Denny Avdia, Jordan Poole have played very well. Corey Kispert looks really good. Belon, Tristan Vucevic look like really solid draft picks. But they've also come into a place where they've set themselves up really good in the draft lottery. They picked up extra draft capital with the Suns' second round pick and the Clippers' first round pick, which should be 26. So they're going to give themselves 2 picks in the top 30 in a draft that's not the best draft. Some GMs are calling it the worst draft, in the last 20 years. But I'm confident in this front office based on their Bilal and Tristan finds that they can find some talent in what's considered a rough draft class. So look, that's gonna do it for this episode. Discuss Denny, Poole, Kispert, Vucevic in this last week and how well they've played and what was an 0-3 week, but how well each of those guys have really played. Talked about some injury concerns. I wouldn't expect Jones, Shamet, Kuzma, Bagley, or Holmes to be back this season. Still waiting to hear back on Johnny Davis with that right hip contusion. Hopefully he can play these last three games and show what he can maybe do. And look, the Wizards finish at Minnesota, home against Chicago, at Boston. Likely finish 15-67 in what's been a really tough year for the Wiz, but it's year one of a rebuild. They've wanted to lose and they've done, that and more. So can't be too mad with how things have played out. But look, that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate all you guys for tuning in as always. I say this every episode, but it really means a lot to see the growth of this podcast, the support, and all the guys that have DM'd me and said that they really enjoy listening. This helps them when they're, working out or driving in the car, long distances in the car. They're just, bored at work. They throw it on and they really enjoy it. And that means a lot to me. This is why I do it, to provide entertainment and inform Wizards fans and keep them engaged this season. So I'm really appreciative of all you guys for listening, and that's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.